Do you have a call to grill? It's Faltergreen Sports Centre on Scariff Bay Community Radio. Good afternoon, everyone. You're welcome once again to Sports Centre here on Scariff Bay Community Radio on the 88.3 FM and 92.7 FM on the TuneIn app in association with their credit union. On today's show, I'm joined as always by co-presenter Pat McNamara. And on today's show, we're going to be talking rugby and GAA. And I'm going to be joined in a moment here in studio by our regular rugby analyst here, Michael Madden. And later on, we're going to be joined by well-known journalist Seamus Hayes to give us his views on the GAA affairs. And now we're delighted to be joined here in studio once again by our regular rugby analyst, Michael Madden. And the last time we had Michael here, we were in great hope we were going to face England in a vital Six Nations game, which unfortunately didn't go away. Okay, we won the Six Nations title, and now we're into the European Cup. And not going so great for the locals here in Munster as they've gone out of it, but... Michael, we'll delve more into that. You're welcome once again.
Thank you. Yeah, good to be here.
Michael, okay, Six Nations champions. Okay, the old enemy. They got one over us.
Yeah. It was always going to be tricky to go over there. I don't know why people thought going to Twickenham was going to be easy, but it still took them till the last minute to beat us. We're in good health. We've lots of options now, and Irish rugby is probably in the strongest place. Munster mightn't be, but Irish rugby, the brand, the IRFU brand, is very strong at the minute.
And there's no doubt, and in fairness, I'm coming back off the which had to be a huge disappointment coming from the World Cup, and they regrouped and. Mm. Look, obviously the teams were never going to play as well after the World Cup, in the Six Nations. But they won the Six Nations, and in fairness, great to see Peter Mahoney in probably his last international game and at home in De Viva lifting the Six Nations title.
Yeah, I think it was a great way for him to finish. I presume he is finished. There is some talk of him going on the summer tour, but I have my doubts. But it is great that he got a swan song, because too many of our very best didn't get it. You can think of so many that O'Gara, all these lads, and they gave so much and never got the
win a home trophy.
And what's he get going with? Is it five championships?
Five championships.
It's a brilliant haul. Too many that's retired from Irish rugby with that.
I was just wondering, maybe Leo, just coming into my head there now. Did Ireland's efforts in the World Cup, do you think that they're a slightly tireder team towards the end of the Six Nations, in the sense that we, even though we finished well enough, weren't overly convincing? And the great sign of a squad is to win games playing badly. The England kick, the drop goal at the end, well into the last seconds, was kind of freakish in a way. But overall, did you think that maybe the World Cup caught up on them a little bit? It was a tough group, and they'd put so much into it. I know there was a few months break and all that, but it was clubs game. So do you think maybe the team nearly needed a break as much as anything else? I thought they were a bit stale, maybe from the high peak of their previous times.
I suppose we have to look at it was it a rebuild, or was it kind of just a plough on? Joe McCarthy was a great find, and he proved himself, but then toward the latter stages
didn't shine out really at the end.
Whether he was found out or whether because the more videotapes they have on you, the more they can watch what you're doing and the more they can take you out. So it's kind of they're definitely still a great team. They are, you'd think they need to probably evolve again another bit, because people are beginning to figure out, that they're playing, this kind of passing game.
And
that's what happened under Joe Schmidt as well. They kind of found out this is all you have to do to stop them, and then they don't really have a plan B. And we have enough time and we have enough talent, and we have some fabulous players coming through. Like most of the teams, if you look how France kind of impale, it was incredible.
Probably the most talented, peak, wasn't it?
Yeah,
we peaked the first night.
Yeah, most talented team in it, really. France, biggest men in it, and what did they win? Two games.
Yeah,
it's incredible.
The opposition with the really fast line speed seemed to kind of stifle us a bit under. Had we an out half, maybe to get us in behind a bit more and play more percentage rugby up in the other half, or obviously be able to keep the ball in hand. But
I suppose that's the other thing, with a very young out half, and he's still only learning his trade. Do you know what I mean? So it's
still to win the championship with all those
It's very hard to argue with it. We've only won, what is it, six championships, and we're here fucking nearly hammering down on them.
It just shows where the bear is, really.
Yes.
You know what I mean?
Exactly. But, yeah.
given, as you look at, you kind of alluded there, given video analysis now, Michael, right? And I often say about the, you know, you look at the South Africans and that they get their team ready in, as Erasmus has done, in 18 months.
Yeah.
They don't ever show their full hand is never shown until the actual World Cup, right?
Yeah.
With the way all the games are watched now, and sure, everyone is taken to a tee. Are Ireland kind of going on that cycle, do you think? Maybe, because I think in this championship that they just kind of, you alluded to it, maybe ploughed on. They let us, here, we'll play out this one, and from then we'll build with the, probably the tour to South Africa. Yeah. Is that a fair summation?
It is, in a way, but see, Ireland is slightly different to most of the other provinces or the teams, is that the IRFU fund everything. You know, they fund all the different models and all the, and it all works, and it only works because we must compete hard to win or to finish well in the Six Nations. We must have big crowds in October. We must have a summer tour. We must have all these things, because all these things pay for everything else. Do you know what I mean? So, in fairness to the IRFU, they've come out of COVID very well. They've built back up, all their bank accounts are now.
It's a very successful business model, in fairness.
It is, like, it's one that Scotland, everyone is trying to copy. But in fairness to the IRFU, they have it right. You know, say what they like, they could probably get a bit more ruthless in how they deal with people at, when they get to a certain age, but that hasn't happened because of, you know, the old history of the rugby. And that's probably the next evolution, is that they will start to look at players in four-year cycles rather than in career cycles.
Okay, obviously there's a change at the top, right? With David, for David, is Humphreys for Nusafora, right?
Yeah.
And in Humphreys, he played a long time into his career. Late into his career as well, you know, and we were probably assuming he was probably maybe gone, should be gone years before. It was a bit light. No, in fairness, he was a very good out half.
Yeah.
What impact do you think he's going to have?
Well, do you know, I can only give you, we had only one dealing with people that were, so the guy that was giving us our loan for the shed above, he actually was from Northern Ireland, and he was so efficient. It wasn't a question of, you know, he can do this, or he can, no, this is what we've set, this is the way it's structured of it, this is the plan. They're like, they're probably, you know, disciplined and very, you know, to the letter, whereas, you know, whereas we go in and we might say, ah, sure, look at, geez, that's Peter O'Mahony. He has so many years. He's, geez, how many great days out and everything. We give him another shot. Whereas I think he's going to bring a slightly more ruthless fucking streak to
business
it.
Like, yeah.
Yeah, and that's the game. That is the name of the game now. You know, that's why New Zealand, you could see them all been chipped off to Japan. Like, it's not because they don't want them around. It's that they're not going to pay the wages that they're on, because they're building for the next 4 years.
Yeah, so obviously going to Japan is their pension scheme, their final payoff.
Yeah, 100%.
Okay, looking at Ireland before we are going to get into the Munster thing in a second. Okay, obviously, look at O'Mahony has probably had his swan song. Like, okay, Conor Murray, just after signing a Munster contract for 12 months, probably...
That's it.
Even if he might make the summer tour to South Africa, if that's the way, maybe just for experience, but... The holding back, the keeping of these players, Michael, and I know you have to have experienced players, is it holding back some of our younger guns? Are they ready yet?
Yeah, well, there's two ways to look at it. You either look at it that, is it the URC doing well in the URC, or is it doing well in the European Cup? You can build players up in the URC, but people still want to see you doing well in the European Championships. That's what people talk about. You're not ringing me to come down and talk about your URC matches. Like, it's the European Championship is where it's at. That's where everybody's mind is at. You know, that's what people look at. So I think the way to go is to try and build stronger depth into, like, especially like you saw on, with Munster, like a prop having to play 80 minutes is just crazy.
And to follow on that one, it's the only time I've seen it happening in anywhere in the last 3 or 4 years where a prop is set to play. Now, obviously, a prop may have to come on if someone got hurt, you come back on it, you have to come back on it. It's the first time I've seen it where 80 minutes, you know, and this is a fella that has played over 250 games for Munster, you know.
Yeah.
Pat, I think.
Yeah,
you wonder what really is.
I mean, the depth isn't there in Munster, certainly. I mean, the depth is there in Leinster, as we know. I mean, they're bringing on a fella that's probably as good a person as the fella he's replacing, you know. But, like, I suppose there is that imbalance in the whole Irish. If you have got it so right, the problem is Leinster are whether they win the European Cup or not, and they might have a tough one with La Rochelle, we know that well.
Sure, and the law of averages, Pat, they're surely going to get over them once.
You know, they really have nearly more players than they need, to be honest about it. And I mean, you know, if there could be some system, I know there have been times when they've sent players onto the other provinces, but Munster certainly aren't bringing through enough players. As simple as that. I mean, there's a few of the foreign lads there as well, and you know what I mean. I suppose Nyman being the example, like, you know, I mean, and what has he given them?
And he's going to
give them. And I mean, look at we know, like, from the Clare point of view, Tony Butler and Coughlin are coming up there. I would love to see, you know, when they will be getting the number two or three slots, you know, maybe number two slots. Mm. I hope they're capable. Time will tell. Mm. But Munster certainly haven't been the one. I suppose money was the problem, you know, as you said, Mike, before often. And I think, Mike, you did say as well that Munster are beginning to pay their way now, I suppose. So maybe that's a sign of turning a corner.
Yeah, I definitely think. Yeah, the rumor is that the books are balanced for this year. So, like, if that's true, then they've definitely turned a corner. And like, I've been watching a couple of the trials and the with the underage and all that, and like the club team, which has to be the backbone with the schools, has been way more developed in the last year and a half, 2 years, than it ever was before.
In fairness to Michael, they've been you know, we have to give them credit. They have been working away there, you know, and they had no choice. They had to.
They had to, and they had to change the way they were. They were too reliant on 6 or 7 or 8 schools producing the players, whereas we have 78 clubs who could be producing teams, and that's what you need. That's what we needed to turn. And they have done it, but the problem is, the lag time on that is about 5 years. So, like, you won't actually know how good or bad you are until 4 or 5 years' time. But there is an awful lot more effort being put into the club squads and the club.
And we have we have local involvement.
We do. With Dunnick and McKenna and Jack Minogue now, after making the 15s and 16s club teams, like. And it's fantastic for them. Like, if Dunnick and McKenna, if he holds stuff right now, he could be playing Junior Cup next year for Munster. Like,
it's a big opportunity for him.
Oh, look at it's huge. Like, and plus they're now training way more than they would have been. You know, they'd never been training during the summer otherwise. Now they're training twice a week during the summer for rugby. Like, and in fairness to Jack Minogue, you know, Scarf, we didn't have a team at under 16 because, you know, the amalgamation.
He went in and he
took his chance and went in, and they have 28 inside there, and he started second row for him there down in Musgrave Park. Fair play to him. Like, that's an effort.
In fairness, congrats to Wise. There's also an involvement in the ladies.
Oh, huge, yeah. I was over on Saturday. It was brilliant. I couldn't believe the standard is so high. Eliza Murphy and Isabella McKenna and all these, geez, the tackling out of them. If I could get some of our lads to do the tackling, it's good. I'd go home every day with a smile on my face. It was brilliant.
In fairness, congrats to them, and look, we look forward to watching their progress with interest. Getting back to Munster, Michael, and obviously, look, a huge disappointment last Sunday.
Yeah.
Obviously, you're playing Northampton, top team in the English Premiership, and you know, you alluded to, Pat, the strength and depth with Munster is just not quite there. We've probably seen the last of some of these players on the big stage.
Yeah, oh, definitely. The likes of Zeebo now and all these guys, Zeebo's still very good now going forward, but defensively, like, he just doesn't want to do it.
Yeah, the reverse gear isn't there.
No, like, and like, it's a bit, you know, nobody gets to, not too many get to write their song when they're leaving, but like, it's as simple as that. Like, it's just over, you know. Yeah, like, at that level, it's definitely over. Like, you could see Northampton, like, that's what you need. Like, the bit of power to break the line, and then the pace out the back any chance that they broke the line, it was nearly a try nearly every time.
Yeah,
there was no stopping it.
They should have had more tries with the amount of position ahead. There's no doubt about that. Obviously, look at the position of Graham Rowntree is up for scrutiny, right? Mm. That goes without saying. If anyone in the rugby circles has been going on, I suppose he bought a lifeline when they won the URC, in fairness to him, and done well to win the URC last year. The reason that lifeline doesn't seem to be around this time, does it, Michael?
Yeah, there's a lot of, you know, they don't seem to be playing or acting like a crowd that just won a cup the year before. Like, it doesn't seem to be a happy place, doesn't seem to be a happy family. And like, that was one of Munster's obvious strengths, was the fact that they were so tight, you know, like it was one for all and all for one, like the one, whereas at the moment, like when Peter O'Mahony went off, he went straight down the tunnel, like, do you know what I mean?
There was no interaction at all.
And he didn't sit in the bench or watch the lads or anything like
that. Munster was built on the spirit they had in the squad. That's the whole family of players, management, and even supporters, I suppose, in the earlier days, in the new home in Bartley, it was the... Even if they were as good as the opposition, you knew they were going to win the battle in the end. You know, and that seems to be gone a bit.
And I suppose the worry is that, you know, this next generation, have they got the grit or the talent to match what was there before? Like, because like when Murray and these guys are gone, that's the end of the golden age as we thought it. They were like, so it's a big question, and it's a big step up for all these other guys. Do you know, like this, like I do think they have good player, and they have, like, to be fair to Greg Casey, I know that he played last Saturday and he was still sick and he puked and everything on the side. So, fairness, he made, you know, there is passion there. So,
do they need to go in a different direction with the coaching, Michael? You know, because I know Rowntree is very much, look, he was a prop.
Yeah.
To me, I don't know, it just doesn't seem to be a prop being.
Well, see, I probably agree with you.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, but like, the problem is, like, do we have the players to play the game that he wants to play? And I don't think we have.
It doesn't seem that way.
No, we have to do, because we don't have his big and losing Steinman to Munster, even though he's he's costing God knows what he's cost, like, and that money will be freed up. So it would be interesting to see how they would spend that money. But like, do you really? Do you know, do you want to keep going down the same road? Like, you know, we're not the ones we haven't bought real quality. You know,
it hasn't happened in a while, though.
No,
you know, so you're not building. The squad camp isn't being built up.
Even if you look at the starting team there last weekend, I mean, realistically, I suppose how many players can approach a world class? The Tyburn is the obvious one, I suppose. I mean, we hope Crowley is going to be a top player, but he's still learning the ropes, as Michael said. Zeebo. It was 10 years ago. Peter O'Mahony, no question, was. Snyman should have been the man to maybe lift them to the next level. It just didn't happen. But recently, looking around, I mean, you have a lot of great old battlers, honest to goodness pros. But recently, of the starting team, only you could say Tyburn is a guy that was probably world class.
Yeah.
And we, you know, go back to the old days, you know, when the glory days, I mean, there was five or six players in that pack.
And like with the European Cup, like you're really going nowhere unless you need to get
back row there. Sorry, Coombs really hadn't delivered the promise he had two or three years ago.
He hasn't got
it. Very honest to goodness worker. Mm. Peter Manny, as we say, has given his all for the cause. So like, do you know you're?
Well, I think they do have some. Like Ahern is definitely.
Absolutely,
Gleeson is going to be very good as well. Like
absolutely,
they will have a lot coming off that under 20 team coming in. So like I know we're doom and gloom, but like. Right, like it's all a cycle, like, do you know what I mean?
And Michael, you know, as we speak about Rowntree, is it time to go for a homegrown? Like Ulster are after going, you know, obviously your men. I can't think of the letters. And Richie Murphy's gone in up there. The fellow in charge of the Irish 20s, like,
I know.
So he knows what's coming through. Is it time?
Well, he'd have been better signing for us.
I was going to say, that's what I'm kind of coming around to. Ulster did. Where did the decision? I know. Look at Humphreys is after to come in. I'm just thinking. Maybe a bit paranoid here. Humphreys is have to come in as the head man, right?
Yeah.
Next thing. There was always the rumours about Buffy going to Munster. That was always there.
Yeah.
And next thing, he's in the middle of the season. He's gone to Tulsa. Like, I know it's already supposed to be the end of the season, but.
Well, it won't be.
It won't be now.
No. But, and like, plus, like, Ulster were in real trouble. If they don't finish in the top eight, like, they're out of the European Cup. Yeah. Like, so it's like, you know, it's. So.
But Humphreys is, in fairness to him, he's done his first thing right for his hometown.
Oh, yeah.
So you have to give him, he's after, he's after saving him. Like.
Oh, he's, like, he's given him a chance anyway.
Yeah.
But, like, I worry, like, that it could be another couple of years and, you know, Tom and Pat, you know, it needs to be full up for, you know, you need the crowd, you need the money coming in to fucking make changes and sign these players. Like.
Michael, Tom and Pat, he's not getting the crowds.
No.
It's just not. No. You know, we've all been there at the games. It's not.
But it's all results based, and we're kind of saying about doom and gloom there, Michael. Correctly, we're maybe it shouldn't be doom and gloom, but that's because they were beaten by Northampton, who are a little side. Mm. If they had managed to beat Northampton, everything could be changed. If they had one, it would be full the next time. I suppose the team brings the crowd out rather than the other way around. Mm. You know, the crowd doesn't lift the team,
you have to look at that. A lot of the crowd now is Cork-based, because a lot of the players at the moment are Cork-based. Yes,
the majority, by a big lot.
Are Cork-based. It's that's why with this centre of excellence they're supposed to be building in Cork and everything, like, you know, you would worry that
You're reading my mind here, because obviously with that big game that was played, you know, and they are going to be pushing for more games in Cork-Cueve. Yeah. Obviously they're in this. And the GA has turned the circle down there, by allowing the games. There's a fear that that gap is going to appear again, where that's Cork-Limerick divide. Mm. And you know, look at when things are off. That divide has never gone really. I know they played for. He's never gone away at the top, but he's pushing towards the echelons of Cork again, though.
Well, it is, and the problem is the Limerick clubs, which were normally the stalwarts, are. Geez, they're relegation fodder nearly at this stage. There's too many clubs in there, and every player in there, it seems to be like you just cycle around between the different clubs. There's no strong team in there.
No real team.
You could, Young Munsters maybe, but there's no team in there that you could say could take on any of the top Dublin teams have a chance of winning. And as long as that continues, then there's
the gap player development. The gap is already getting wider.
Yeah.
And Cork will always be strong as well. Shannon and Gary Owen and particularly Shannon and Gary Owen, I suppose you will.
And to follow on, Mike, that's one of the things I can't comprehend at the moment. I know you have traditions and all these crack and everything, but in Wales, they had to merge. Obviously, they had regions. They had to merge the regions. But is the time coming in Munster? And I suppose you'll get shot in Limerick if you say this, is it time for clubs to join up, two clubs to join up and pool the resources all together?
They are joining up already at under-16s, under-18s and everything, but they have still got this idea that they have to be on their own for senior. But they can do that, but they're not going to be competitive. And if you're not going to be competitive...
But your results speak for themselves.
I
read something there a couple of years ago as well, that since the Limerick Hurlers got going well, that it has turned a lot of the young lads, maybe 14, 15, 16, who might go playing with the rugby clubs, maybe outside the city, or maybe anywhere, that they're kind of turned back towards GAA again a bit. Yeah. You know, it's a small little thing can turn things, you know.
You only have to...
Likewise, the crowds, they're saving to go to maybe Limerick Hurlers matches because they're a winning team,
In Apishig, you have to go in there, look at their grounds and their AstroTurf. And their fields and their everything, there's no problem with money there,
and you could poke the ball up to Tom and Pat from there.
It's all about results, the long run.
Before we go away from the underage rugby, and we must say congrats to Oisín Minogue from Killaloe, two caps for Ireland over the weekend and played very well at under 19 level.
He's actually coming up to, he's going to give out the under 9 medals for us this weekend, so it's brilliant to have him up.
And I know they're steeped in rugby and in the GAA, so well done unto Oisín as well. Finally, Michael, South African tour coming up. They could have peaked 10, I suppose if you want to beat the best, you have to play the best, I suppose. Obviously they had a great series down there the last time, but South Africa, really, they look ahead to 4 years' time. They have started probably, they'll be early, it's probably too early for them to start their process. But Ireland going down there, what approach is Farrell going to take, given the fact that he's going to be out of the scene for the next 12 months?
Well, I'll just start with Razzie's approach, because Razzie has been listening to everyone saying, Ireland are the best team in the world. And I can just imagine the dressing room. I can just imagine what he's going to say to them. It is going to be one of the toughest tests that ever happened, I'd say. There is going to be mass murder at that thing. I tell you, it's going to be tough. It is going to be tough. And for Farrell, I think he has to bring a very strong team down there, because otherwise it could leave a mark that could last a long time on them. Do you know? I still think even that New Zealand, remember Ireland nearly beat New Zealand and the next day they came out 16
in a week.
That's the fear I have now about this tour, because in fairness, it's not the team, it's the media and it's all the thing. Ireland number one, the best team,
revenge for Paris as well.
And as well as that, with the South Africans, didn't they, they know, obviously, the top players are playing, But by their games now, that they're playing in the URC, yeah. And they have, in fairness now, they have been brilliant for the URC, right?
Brilliant.
They've been a lifeline.
Yeah.
They'd probably know every player.
Yeah.
Coming up now, every talented.
Way more knowledge than they used to have.
Yeah.
Way more.
Yeah. Oh, definitely. Definitely. But like.
But it's no place to bring a full development squad in there. You'll have to have some of your stalwarts.
He'll have to.
No question.
I wonder. Yeah, he probably will bring. I thought maybe he might leave the Munster out half at home and try and bring, see who would be his second. But I'd say he'll have to bring them all because it's going to be a fairly tough.
Yeah.
I could see him leaving O'Mahony and all these. But like, plus you have to look at all the guys that haven't got a shot. Like, there's a good few guys in Connacht. There's a couple of scrum halves there that could easily be number two by the time that tour is over.
But I just have a thing about Blade. I think maybe his chances passed him by when he was playing at his best. He didn't seem to get it. But technically, you know, with Murray gone now, obviously your man is Gibson Park is off the charts. What I mean. So you're playing for number two. Casey's probably the number two at the moment.
Probably isn't going to be.
Probably needs more time against these lads as well.
Oh, definitely. Like that is the one thing it's going to be brilliant for. But like, it's going to be huge tours. Financially, it'll be.
There's three tests. Brilliant. In London, yeah?
Two tests. Yeah. Like, it's going to be like sold out stadiums. It's going to be. I don't know what the deal is for the TV rights and all that. It financially be very successful, and but the fear I have is that, it could damage us like long term, because it takes a long time to get over a bad beating or not competing enough.
Yeah.
If you're going to be number two in the world.
Yeah,
you've got to step
welcome
up
to the top. Yeah.
Do you think we missed a trick here by not bringing Erasmus back into Irish rugby when the chance was there? I know it wasn't set in stone, but there was a chance.
The only thing is that the IRFU is not set up the same way the South African is. Like, the IRFU would go absolutely insane if there was WhatsApp videos and Snapchats of some lad drinking and dancing around the bit. Can you just imagine it? In fairness, he understands where he is and he knows where he can get away with. But he says things that other coaches probably wouldn't get away with either. But he backs it up then. I don't know if you saw the series the World Cup.
Oh, I did. I did.
If you watch that, you kind of understand.
Yeah.
The whole thing, and he's an amazing coach. Amazing, understands people very well. Understands how to get the best out of people. Understands what buttons to press. There's some people he just understands how to read them and how to just get that extra. He's not talking about getting an extra 10% here. We're talking about getting an extra 1 or 2%.
And
of course, Jerry Fenry down there with him now as well. Not quite many either.
Yeah, but can you, just one example, so can you imagine a semi-final of the World Cup and we take Paul O'Connell off after 43 minutes and we take... Yeah. It would never happen.
Yeah.
Never happen. They took Etzebeth off.
Yeah.
And there was no talk with it at all. Not a word about it. He walked straight off and sat in the bench.
Yeah.
Come on, by zero.
That's respect.
That's it.
And belief. Yeah. Michael, we look forward to enthralling summer again. I know just this time last year we were psyched for World Cup.
Yeah.
Look at these summer tours, they're good. There's no doubt about it.
There's always something to look forward to.
And this is probably the best one at the moment that you could get. There's no doubt about it. And we look forward to it.
Definitely.
Can I ask a quick question for him before he goes? Do you think Leinster are capable of winning this? We're all capable. Do you think they'll actually deliver? I think La Rochelle is still going to be a major, I won't say bananas again, a major dose for them to overcome.
I think they're going to beat La Rochelle.
Yeah,
I don't know if they're going to win it.
Okay, name the winner as you ran that fair.
It's hard to know. I'll go with them. But I just don't know if they... I watched them against the Bulls. They are something else. But
they're not the same Leinster team that was there a couple of years ago.
No, but...
They are so hurt.
I do think some of the subs they brought on, I hadn't even heard their names. And they played really well.
Yeah.
Really well. So, at this stage, we might as well shout them on because
Noel Mack is still there with Bordeaux, big day too. Even though they're an outside shot. Very unfortunate.
If they can get over this weekend as well, they'll go seriously for it.
Yeah.
Because, like, I do think Roger is kind of under pressure to win the top 14. Is the thing. Because they've already won this thing twice, and, you know, there's no more medals for that.
Yeah.
I do think the top 14 is more.
And they're on their last run at winning the Super 14 as well.
Like, he's under pressure.
Yeah.
Do you know, he is under pressure.
He'll admit that himself, though, in fairness. And, of course, I know they're in Cork all week week preparing. He's gone back to home ground.
He's got multi-millionaires, you know, and they don't have the Munster problem. Like, they have boodles of money, and they've picked these lads, and these are the lads they're supposed to deliver. So it's up to Rog to make him deliver. Like, because Roundtree's excuse is like, these are all homegrown. I'm only trying to make them into something, you know. So it's mutton and lamb, isn't it?
That's not all about it. Camille, we could talk all night. Michael, as always, thanks a million for coming in and talk to us during the season. And we're ready. This season didn't finish, and we're looking forward to the next one. Michael, as always, Camille Mahabat.
Sound.
And once again, thanks to Michael Madden for taking the time to talk to us. And we move from the sport of rugby to GAA, and we're delighted to be joined on the line once again by a man who is always very, very good to us. Well-known journalist with well over 50 years experience at this stage, is Seamus Hayes. And Seamus, you're welcome once again to Scarpia Community Radio.
Thanks very much, Leo. Thank you.
Seamus, look, we're in the early throes of April, but what a busy season. The season is really up and running. And you might give us a quick synopsis on the progress of the football teams. Obviously, during the week, the under-20s, unfortunately, suffered defeat against Kerry, but all is not lost. Miners had a great win against Limerick during the week. You might just give us where they lie in with their progress, Seamus.
Yeah, well, the Miners have qualified for the final of the Phase 2, or the final of Group 2 in the Minor Championship. They will play Tipperary twice in the next 2 weeks. They played them in the final group game next Tuesday, and the following Tuesday they played them in the Phase 2 final for the Darrell Darcy Cup that commemorates a young guy in Tipperary who died at a young age a few years ago. And the winners of that game, that Darrell Darcy Cup, will go on to play in the Munster Championship semi-final against the losers of the Cork Kerry semi-final. The losers of that Darrell Darcy Cup will have another competition then in the Phase 2 championship group. There's a new format this year where there's a lot of extra games, which is good for the development of the game. Now, we're clear to win the Phase 2 final against Tipperary and qualify for the Munster final. They would then go on to compete in Phase 1 of the Minor Championship. There are three phases after the provincial competition in the minor football this year. Phase 1 will the two finalists in Munster will be in it, whoever they are. Phase 2, the team that wins the Darrell Darcy Cup will go into that, provided they're not in the Munster Minor Final. And Phase 3 will be for the remaining teams in Munster. So all six will still have games to go in the new format for their own titles after that. The Clare Miners, as I say, they have qualified for Phase 2. Very lucky to beat Waterford in the first round 2 weeks ago. The very last play in the game, they managed a goal. There wasn't even time for the kick-out.
And a man scored in his own field, exactly.
Yeah, a man scored in his own field, and on the night out of 1-11, the same man scored 1-8. And he's a relative of Pat Burke, who played for both Dublin and Clare, and who is based in Dublin. He's one of that family, Conor Burke. Last night they beat Limerick down in Ballyagran. Poor first half, 5 points down at half time. Turned the game around in the second half. The introduction of a young fella called Aidan Weaver, who happens to play football with my own club, Mr. Casey, and who had been out injured for the past number of months, really, who was a first choice player last year, but back to full fitness. They brought him on 5 minutes before half time. And he played a key role in turning the game around for Clare, who dominated the second half. Conor Finnell, a member of a well-known Kilrush family, who maybe are known not for football and not for traditional dancing, because his father runs the Hell for Leather dance troupe, John Finnell. But Conor got two goals and a couple of points last night and was key to the victory. So they are now through to play Tipperary, as I said, twice in the next 2 weeks, and after that we'll have four more games. So huge development going on for that age group, and you know the players are improving all the time. Their second half last night was quite a big improvement from the first round display a week earlier. And then in the under 20, Clare qualified for phase two, you know, with two wins over Limerick and Waterford. Started phase two tonight against Kerry, suffered a heavy enough defeat, were in contention in the first half. Very difficult conditions in Quilty tonight. Very, very strong wind, probably not far off gale force wind, which made conditions very difficult for the players. Clare were on level terms with Kerry at half time, but Clare had played with the elements in the first half. In the second half, Kerry dominated the game, to be fair. Were the better team, had a couple of key players, and you know, and won comfortably enough. You know, and Clare have two more games. Next Wednesday, they go to Tipperary to play Tipperary. And the following week, they go to Cork to play Cork. And they will need to get something out of the next two games if they are to progress after that.
But Seamus, in terms of development though, the amount of games, and especially it's a great with the minor championship, the amount of games and getting international competition further to go on, it can only be good for the players. Same with the Clare 20s. Obviously the Clare 20 team wouldn't be as strong this year as other years, you know, even last year, given the following on from that great performance against Kerry last year, you know, they've lost a number of key players who have gone into the senior setup. But in terms of development, Seamus, it's very, very positive for Clare football.
Oh, it's hugely positive, Leo, and that's the big plus this year. You know, the under-20 football championship for the last couple of years was a straight knockout, you know, and you just were guaranteed one game. So from that that situation, Clare were knocked out in the Munster semi-final last year in the game. The win takes their time against Kerry. I've lost, as you said, a number of the key players from that who are now overage and who are now making an name for themselves with the senior team. But this year, they already have been guaranteed six games, you know, which is a massive, massive difference altogether. And these fellas are gaining very valuable experience because, and the tonight's team, quite a number of those are eligible again this year. They're just out of minor grade, like we look at fellas like Derek, Culligan from my own club. He was last year's minor captain, so
good,
he is
good player, no fairness, good player,
and a good few of the players, Josh Maloney from the home club in Kilmurry Brick and Audrey Cunningham, these lads. They're gaining valuable experience, and there's no doubt but we'll hear a lot about them in the next couple of years as they move up the ladder to the senior team. So, as you say, it's huge for the development of football at that level, and that's what counties like Clare need. If you're trying to cope with the Corks and the Kerrys of this world, you know, the biggest thing you can do is play get as many games as possible against the top-class opposition. And even the minor team, before the start of the championship, 2 weeks ago, they had played seven challenges against teams from Leinster and Connacht. So, you know, to get these championship games in on top of that, you know, they're learning all the time. And there's huge work being done by the respective managers, Dermot Coughlin from Kilmurry Bridge and Michael Neal from Milltown and the backroom teams that are part of what they have.
In fairness, Seamus, two unsung heroes of their football, there's no doubt about that.
Yeah, it can only benefit their football going forward.
And Seamus, as we go into the senior team, right, and obviously a lot of people weren't expecting much off the senior team, I think, you know, they've maybe exceeded expectations a small bit by bringing it down to the last game and not playing too bad of a brand of football, right, in the league. And again, that square ball decision above in Mullingar came back to bite at the very, very end. But looking to the championship, Seamus, and obviously Waterford produced the shock of the year, which maybe wasn't as big a shock as maybe people thought, because they'd already drawn with Tipperary in the league. But to turn them over last Sunday, only after scoring a point with the wind, you know, obviously Clare have to go down to Fraher Field. It will be an awkward fixture, but there should be enough of talent in Clare to get over that one.
Well, there should be, but the danger is that people might take something for granted here. You know, they will say Waterford's record against Clare, you know, hasn't been good. Clare have had the misery of Waterford quite regularly over the last 10, 15 years. So Clare have to be very careful on this one. And, you know, a Clare team that is relatively inexperienced, but they should have plenty. And hopefully Killian Brennan will be fully fit and will be in contention to play his first game of the year with Clare. He's missed the entire league campaign because of a knee grinding injury. So hopefully he'll be ready to come in. But the young lads that have come in have gained valuable experience, you know, and Michael Gary from Cooler Clare, has been grown in confidence with every game. And Brian McNamara, who was one the hero from the under-20 game last year, the under-20 campaign last year, he has been growing in confidence as well. And Killian Ruin is now back to fitness, thankfully, because he's been struggling with fitness. And, you know, he's a key player now in that squad. So they'll need those fellas going well. And, you know, there's four or five of the team from Euro who've gained massive experience over the last couple of years. And Ronan Lanigan and these fellas. So hopefully they'll be settled going into the game in Dungavern, because it's a tricky place to go at the best of time, as you said there.
Yeah.
It won't be easy. Waterford will be on a high now, having beaten Tipperary, and like they're one step away from being the Munster final, which is something nobody would have predicted.
No, that was and big Tom O'Connell with his celebrations is probably the picture of the week in GA circles. So he'd be buying as well, and he's not a bad hurler. I've seen him playing hurling before. He's not too bad at that either. Seamus, right. before we finish on the football side of it, right? Obviously, look, congratulations to Lizzie Casey. You have a big event this weekend, maybe a few years after when it should be due to the COVID. But in 1971, you won the senior football championship and
the junior football,
and obviously you had an East Clare representative that might be known to a lot of our people out here. You might just tell us a small bit about the same men and the connections.
Yeah, we won the junior championship, the first ever title won by the club, and we finished the year by adding the league title to it. But John Kelly, who resides in Scarif, Roscommon native, had just come to the Cup of Teaching appointment in Scarif College there. And he threw his lot in with us for the year. He had played with Roscommon in Crow Park in the All-Ireland Senior Football Final of 1962. So it was a massive lift to us to have a man of his experience and his calibre coming to join us. And he played a key role in helping us to win that championship. He scored at every game of the championship. We had four games in that championship campaign. He finished with 4 goals and 3 points from the 4 games. He scored quite a number of points in the league as well. But, you know, he added something special to the team that, you know, that we didn't have at the time. We had a mixture of young and old in that team. But a man of his experience was a massive boost to us. And I suppose the man that steered him in our direction and helped him to join us doesn't live too far away there from Scarif, Dan Kelly out in O'Gonnelaw. He's Dan Kelly's a Lisa Casey man.
Yes.
And Dan was a member of the teaching staff in Scarif Community College as well. And it was he got John to throw in his lot with us. And it was a fantastic year for us, for the club, a year to never be forgotten. And we didn't get to celebrate the 50th anniversary in 2021 or the following year because of the COVID restrictions, but it's finally been celebrated now on Saturday night at a function in Kenny O'Dea's in Lisa Casey.
No better place to have it, and we wish all the very best to look.
John is heads up west now for a bit of celebration. We'll have to talk to him about it some night here.
Yeah, it's just one we have to quiz him about again. Yeah. Seamus, turning to holding, and what a weekend we had last weekend, Seamus, with the minors, 20s and seniors, with the seniors winning their first league since 2016. And Clare Hurling in a good place, Seamus.
Yeah, without a doubt, it was a fantastic week. You know, there had been rumours going that the minor team weren't as good as last year, that the under-20s weren't as good as last year. But, you know, they kept everything quiet under the radar. Minors were very impressive on Thursday night in getting their campaign after winning Saturday against Waterford. The under-20s equally so on Friday night against Limerick in a game that ebbed and flowed and down in Six Mile Bridge and before the big crowd, and then to cap it all off, the league title on Saturday night. You know, and great atmosphere in Tullis. I suppose many people have commented since it was a little subdued afterwards. It just shows you how focused these guys are. The whole focus is on Sunday week against Limerick and on the championship, because there's a huge week, a huge 7 days for Clare Hurling, and you know, things don't go right in those games. As a couple of the players said to me after the game, the league title win will be quickly forgotten about, you know. So, but it was a great win on Saturday night in Tullis, the better team, without a doubt. They answered all the questions I felt, and even when Kilkenny came back and put pressure on, they responded, and they never showed any signs of panic. But it's been a great, great week for Clare Hurling. And, you know, there's a couple of big weeks coming up now where there are games between hurling and football, there are games 4 and 5 times a week, 4 and 5 successive days of the week, you know, to choose a night of minor football night. Wednesday nights are under 20 football nights. Thursday night are minor hurling nights. And Friday nights are under 20 hurling nights. And then next week on Saturday we have the senior football Munster senior final. And on Sunday we have the eagerly awaited game against Limerick. So it's a huge time for Clare GAA, and a huge time for supporters of those teams. I suppose the only, I don't know if you'd call it a downer at the moment, is the clamour for tickets. An awful lot of people won't get to the Clare Limerick game, unfortunately.
Yeah, which is a pity.
which is a pity. You know, if the game was maybe in Tullis or Cork or someplace where you could get in 40 or 50,000, yeah. You know,
and you'd fill it,
without a doubt. But you know, I suppose the big thing for me about the senior hurling team this year is that there's such a contest for places in the team. You know, maybe if we were to say maybe if this happened last year, maybe we'd have gone on and won titles last year if the members of the panel had got as much game time as say the year before or last year. But this year, everybody in the panel has got plenty of opportunity to put their hand up and say, look, we're ready, we want to be in the team. And I wouldn't fancy being sitting down trying to pick the team that's going to start against Limerick, because, you know, there's 24 or 5 players who are playing up to that standard, who are confident. And you're at a stage now where, you'd be confident to whoever the name on the team, that there's a belief there that these fellas can deliver.
Seamus, it's very important. But actually, you took the words of remote. It was going to be my question to you about the extension of the panel and now the options. And I suppose maybe one of the slight criticisms of Brian Lowe in the last couple of years was that he hadn't maybe some replacements got ready during league games and that, and Munster games, for the championship when there was injuries or maybe lads out of form. But he seems to have turned around massively, and as we said, there's an awful lot of conjecture now about the team for Limerick, and there's at least 5 or 6 places on the team where you could have at least 2 players in contention, and that's an extremely healthy thing. Obviously, yeah. Within the cup for the league and the middles, the lads seem very happy over it, but I think the biggest thing that has happened is the squad is now much broader and there are way more options.
That's the point, without a doubt. Like, if you look at the, you know, you have 3 goalies, each of whom have distinguished themselves during this league campaign, and each of whom did well. You have a fierce contest, I'd say, for positions in the full back line. Like, Adam Hogan and Conor Cleary seem certainties.
Yeah.
The other cornerback, Conor Lean, has really put his hand up. But then you have Rory Hayes and Paul Flanagan.
Yeah.
You know, and they have done nothing wrong over the last couple of years. And it's similar, you know, Damon Ryan is certainly a certainty, and John Conlon is flying at centre back. Keane Galvin has put his hand up on the other wing, but then you have David McInerney, you know, who's on the wings there, and we know what he's capable of, and he can play in any position in the defence. And, you know, you have such a and do with Shane O'Donnell coming back in the last day, and hopefully Tony Kelly might be in a position to play some part in the next game. We don't know, because there's not much being said about where he's at. Like, and Brian hasn't given much away. He's just said that he's working with the physio. So, you know, if he's available at fully fit, you know, we all know what Tony Kelly brings to the game. You know, and I'm saying a lot of Limerick people, I'd say a lot of Limerick players would be saying to myself, how are we to try and deal with him now again, you know, if he's fully fit. So there's huge contest for places. You know, and in the forward line, like Conn Smith has put his hand up as well, you know, this year. And you have, you know, the Peter Duggan, the David Fitzgerald, as I say, Shane O'Donnell back, David Reedy, Matt Rogers. You know, there's such a contest.
Ian Galvin.
Ian Galvin.
Aidan McCarthy played his best game of the year last week.
Aidan McCarthy, 2 goals and 10 points. Mm. Like, if you got that, if anyone got that in any game at any level, club or county,
he'd be
resting on that, celebrating that for a month. But he was outstanding. So it's a great position to be in. Now, having said that, you have to do it all over again. Limerick, and everyone knows what Limerick bring to the table. This is arguably the most important game, I suppose, from a Limerick point of view, that they'll have played since Leicester's All-Ireland. Because a winning start to the championship sets them on the road for what they're hoping will be a 5-in-a-row championship. But you know, if they won't want to lose this one above anyone, because if they suffer a loss in their first game, to a certain degree they're kind of on the back foot or a little bit, and having lost the league semi-final, although a lot of people would argue that did they, you know, ask the question, did they want to win it? You know, because they were going off on a training camp anyhow to overseas. But this is a huge game for Limerick, huge, huge game, and they will want to put down a marker. And a win for them over Clare would really give them the start that they want. So there'll be some atmosphere in Innes, you know, on Sunday week.
As you said, it is a pity that more people won't be able to get to see the game live. But Seamus, again, and obviously there's rumours beginning to emanate coming out of Limerick Camp that there is injuries. Obviously it has been, you know, the Clare have taken the limelight a bit away from them. I suppose they'll be quite happy with that, the fact that Clare were in the league final. But just going back to the league final, for confidence alone, Seamus, it's a massive monkey off the back, even to get over the challenge of Kilkenny. And again, going back, you know, it was in the 70s, Clare just couldn't get over the line in the Munster Championships. But, you know, that league was a lifeline. And, you know, if the present day situations were there with regard to back doors and that, there's no doubt that I think Clare would have won an All-Ireland or two back in the 70s. But, you know, it is a big monkey off the back. It's a great confidence booster for the Clare holders, Seamus.
Without a doubt, because, like, this management team, Brian Lohan's manager, has been there for the past 5 years. And, you know, they hadn't won any silverware during that period. So from that point of view, there was pressure on. They may not say that publicly, but there was pressure on, and people were beginning to wonder, you know, were they going to make the breakthrough and win something. So you could see the relief just after the final whistle going in Tullis last week. So that was a huge confidence boost. And then having lost to Kilkenny in the past two All-Ireland Championships, you know, the question was being asked, were we not able to beat Kilkenny, we'll say, when it really mattered. So, you know, from those two points of view, the last week's win was massive, and certainly massive. And, you know, even on the game itself, when Kilkenny came back right at the end and brought it back to a 1-point game or a 2-point game and got the penalty, and, you know, Clare didn't panic, and, you know, Clare came back and answered that very impressively, answered Kilkenny's strong hurling at that period. So, there was massive confidence all round from a number of angles for Clare from that game, and hopefully they can take that with them now into the Limerick game.
Yeah, we congratulate Brian and all the boys, and of course there was an East Clare connection with Brendan Bugler being the coach this year to Clare senior team, and congrats to all. Just looking in general, Seamus, at the championship outline overall, obviously Clare and Limerick is the big game. You know, the first thing is maybe taking a bit of limelight off the other ones. Do you know, if you were to pick your three yourself to come out of Munster at this stage, and it's early days yet, you're obviously looking at maybe Clare Limerick. Who do you think would be the third team?
I think I'd be worried about Cork this year. Now, Tipperary people might say, what about us? And I think there's a kick in what does it like the first 2 weeks could throw this thing up in the air, depending on what way results will go, the first two rounds. You know, in round two, Limerick go to Tullis to play Tiff. That's in 7, Clare go to Cork to play Cork. Could Waterford upset Cork? They have a knack of being able to beat Cork in the modern era, I would say, and having had a disappointing league. I'm sure Davy Fitz would have worked so hard to try and make sure that they get something out of it. And a first round win for them was really...
throw the cat among the pigeons, for sure.
The cat among, definitely. So the first, just that week, the first 7 days, the two rounds in 7 days, are definitely going to, I think, we'll say, if there's an upset there, that's when the whole thing kind of goes pear-shaped. And it's hard to see. I'd like to think that Clare will be one of the three. I can't see Limerick not being one of the three. And then it comes down to... take Cork or it comes down to the other three for the third spot. But like, you could have the scenario, and we all hope that it won't be the case. If things didn't go right for Clare against Limerick and Cork, they could have to go to Cork 7 days after the Limerick game, and if they have suffered a loss against Limerick, it's going to be very hard to go down to Cork. you could have a situation where the player tip game in the left round would then become an All-Ireland final.
Yeah, but winner take all, yeah.
With a winner take all game. So, you know, speaking to the players after the league final success last week, and also listening to Brian Lohan giving after-match interviews, they all made the point that Munster is a hotbed and that any of the five teams are capable of beating the other on a given day, and that everybody will have to be at their best to record wins. Clare were just stressing that they're not looking past the first game, that's their whole focus now on Limerick, and that has been their policy all year. The next game, and not look at anything else, deal with the next game, and when that's over, then you turn your attention to whatever's coming after that. And that was the point the players made quite strong last week, and they were all quite happy to have no celebration of the league success. Happy to have won it, but the focus, they said, from once they went into the dressing room, was straight away get in recovery and focus on Limerick.
And Seamus, finally, before we let you go, nice to see one of the greatest servants of Clare hurling going up to receive the trophy from, you know, the president at Charlotte Burns, and from a Bud Eichmann Scariff man who handed over the trophy in Geoffrey Spalding of Eddians. You know, nice for Conor Cleary. You know, doesn't really get the credit, has never really got the credit he deserves. He's probably the top fullback, you know, himself and you, Lawler, probably the top fullback, but Cleary probably number one at the moment, top fullback in the country.
Yeah, and a very, very focused player. You know, himself and his twin brother Owen, who was captain of the Butlers up to last year, you know, they've given so much to Clare GAA, two very, very talented individuals. Conor has really been outstanding in this season in particular. You know, a lot of us, and myself included, I'll admit, questioned, you know, if it was the right move 2 years ago to move him into the full-back spot. You know, a lot of people felt that, you know, that he mightn't have been happy there, but he has made it his own. He's been outstanding, and he's, you know, the way he's dealt with various opponents. I'd love to have seen him on TJ Reid last week just to see see what way that would have gone, but he has been outstanding all through this campaign, and it was fantastic to see him accept the trophy. And from the point of view that there has been massive, now Clare Holland has always had massive support, great support within the county, but there has been a massive following for hurling in Clare from West Clare, which is a traditional football area, over many years. And to have somebody from what's known as the football area, captain your league title in hurling, was superb altogether, you know. And I suppose from that point of view, it was great. And he's a very modest individual, works hard on his game all the time. And it was great to see the way he was able to lift the trophy and to hear him speak after the game.
And a lovely, cool, calm speech as well, Seamus. You know, no whooping or hollering. And you got the impression that while he was delighted to win it, he wasn't going to go thanking all the whole world and keeping people there all night. And also, he was thinking ahead to bigger days.
Correct. Your last comment there, he was already focusing on the Limerick game this week. There's no doubt about that. And, presumably, I don't know if he continues as captain or not, or if Tony Kelly's elected, Tony's resumed the captaincy. I don't know. I haven't heard whether which. But either way, they are both leaders. And, you know, it is great to have fellas like him going so well for Clare at the moment.
There's no doubt. And you know, great followers and an example to all people who play the game. There's no doubt about that. And congratulations once again to our lads. Seamus, thanks a million for your time here today on Scariff Bay Queen's Radio. As we said, we look forward to the championship games and all the games coming up for the hurlers and the footballers, and no doubt we'll be getting your views again in the very near future. Seamus Hayes, as always, Gramina Mahagot.
No problem, thanks very much, Les. Thank you.
Seamus.
And that concludes our Sports and Saw here today on Scariff Bay Community Radio on 88.3 FM and 92.7 FM, and on the tuning app in association with Dáil Credit Union. My thanks as always to co-presenter Pat McNamara, and also special thanks to our guests Michael Madden and Seamus Hayes for their views. Thanks to Jim Collins in the control door for keeping us on track here. And thanks very much to you for listening. As we look forward in the near future to the games, which are going to be coming ticking fast. And I know that the under-20s did play last night in Páirc Uíomh, and we will be reviewing that game next week along with the preview of the upcoming Munster Championship. And finally, before we leave our Sportsline show here today on Scariff Bay Community Radio, we have to say send our sincere condolences to the Maloney family, to Rory, Martina, Guiva and all extended family members and the said passing of Jack, and he was gone to his eternal reward, and may Jack Maloney rest in peace. And also condolences to the Walsh family in Killaloe on the said passing of Liam Walsh, better known as Goose, you know, a staunch member of as a player and as a mentor for and a supporter of Smith O'Brien's GA Club, and to all his family and friends, we also send our condolences. And all that remains is for me, Leo Dial. Until we meet again, it's Bannock Day, August Lawn.